It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Hopes for an end to the state budget crisis this weekend were crushed when the House voted overwhelmingly to reject a deal that both Governor Wolf and the state Senate had agreed to. The Democratic governor wants more money for education, while Republicans have resisted higher taxes to pay for it. But before that issue was even taken up, a proposal to overhaul public pension benefits derailed the deal. Joining us now by phone from Harrisburg to explain what happened and what's next is 90.5 WESA's Capitol correspondent Mary Wilson, who had a very busy weekend. Good day, Mary.
Hi, Paul.
Well, you sound about as disheartened as the other people in Pennsylvania who've been dying to have this thing pass because their jobs depend on it, or their support and their means of doing their jobs depend on it. Let's begin by having you explain how this key piece of the budget, this pension plan, just blew everything up on Saturday.
Okay. A little bit before the weekend last week, the House Republicans had basically issued an ultimatum to the governor, saying, the House GOP has said for a long time that they don't have the votes for the kind of tax increases that would be required to support a $30.8 billion budget. And that's a spend figure that had previously been agreed to by all the legislative caucuses with the governor's office. The House GOP, a little bit after that tentative agreement, had said, we don't have the votes for that. And then last week they told the governor, if you can find the votes for it within the next day or so, we'll let you put it up for a vote.
And the governor was saying, the governor said they had the votes, right?
Right, right. And so that, and that came out Thursday night, Friday morning. The governor said, I have the votes. So that kind of set the gears in motion for a weekend vote, let's show your cards kind of move. But at that point, the Senate started kind of saying, well, before you put up a tax vote, we want to make sure that our pension bill is home free. Overhauling public pensions is something that's been a top priority of the Senate Republicans, and is something that they were able to pass in their chamber, despite the fact that it's a really controversial issue. They were able to get the governor on board with that bill as well. So they had this plan that was almost to the finish line, So you had the House people saying, okay, well, before we put up the tax vote, we're going to put up this pension overhaul bill for a vote. And that's when things went off the rails. You had House Democrats saying, well, you're certainly not going to have any votes from us to pass that because we never agreed to those pension restructuring changes. Despite the fact that it's part of this framework that Democrats have been hounding House Republicans for not supporting. And then you had House Republicans being lobbied to high heaven not to support the pension bill any longer, even though House Republicans have been in favor of some kind of pension restructuring. And the reason was because it was seen as the precursor to a vote to increase taxes. It was seen as, paving the way for a tax increase. So the pension bill went down, and that scuttled any plans to hold a tax vote.
And apparently nobody saw this coming.
Well, there's a lot of disagreement about who saw this coming. I can't speak to what was seen coming down the pike.
Well, this pension overhaul plan had Governor Wolf's blessing. He's a Democrat, but not one Democrat voted in favor of it. So why are the Democrats saying they won't support this? And had Governor Wolf, what did he do to sell this plan to Democrats?
I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I think the governor so far is not publicly taking House Democrats to task for not supporting that pension bill. This is being painted as, this is a budget that negotiation that has included two issues in particular that are top priorities for Republicans, but are, things that Democrats have never wanted to see. Changes to the state's wine and spirit stores and an overhaul of the state's public pensions. The the pension bill that we're looking at right now would change public pensions for future state and school employees to look less like a traditional pension and more like a traditional pension stacked alongside what's like a 401k, like a lot of people in the private sector have. Democrats are not for that. You know, Democrats want to see more people with traditional pensions.
Sure.
They think that's good for a society. And so that's their position on this. And for Democrats saw their role in this as saying, well, we can carry a vote for taxes. We can vote to increase taxes a little bit more readily, but we can't support something that's anathema to our position on retirement security, which is an overhaul of the public pension benefits. So that's where they kind of, you know, stepped away from the budget negotiation. There are all these little different, you know, there are a bunch of different legislative caucuses that are involved in this negotiation, and they can support certain things, but they can't. You know, no single group here is ready to support all the pieces of a budget deal that's now, I mean, totally in disrepair.
So how do they find their way back to the negotiating table, if at all, in the next few days or the immediate future? Is there a plan to do that?
Not yet. What we've got are House leaders are saying that in the wake of that huge defeat over the weekend, the pension bill going down, and then kind of by association, a tax vote, you know, dying a swift death, or never coming to fruition, I should say. In the wake of that, House leaders are saying that they're going to prepare a short-term budget, which, you know, Democrats will point out that doesn't solve the state's funding problems. And Republicans in the Senate will point that out as well. But House Republicans' leadership, they're saying that, well, listen, we can't come to a full-year budget agreement, so we're just going to do a bare-bones, you know, short-term spending bill that will at least get funding flowing out to schools and nonprofit social services organizations and local governments like the counties. Something I haven't mentioned yet talking to you here today, but, you know, they're really hurting, and they've been hurting for months, but it looks like maybe major school systems are going to have to close late in January or even right after the holiday break if they don't start getting their state aid, from which they've been cut off since July because of this budget impasse. So House GOP leadership are saying, well, at least we'll get a stopgap going. But a stopgap is not a supported avenue by the Senate Republicans, and it's not supported by the governor.
Right. And he has said that he wouldn't, because this isn't the first time that I believe he vetoed it at least once, a stopgap measure, right?
Correct.
So is there any indication that he has changed his position on that? You're saying no.
As recently as yesterday evening, his spokesman said that he will not support a stopgap budget.
So we've got a real a deadlock that just doesn't seem to have any foreseeable way of becoming unlocked. We're talking with Mary Wilson. She's our Capitol correspondent. On the budget negotiations, the talks in the House to try to finally pass a budget over the weekend, which folks were cautiously optimistic would happen, but clearly it hasn't, and it may have even been a situation that sets the process back. Before we wrap up today, Mary, I wanted to take a step back with you and look at the question of, you know, how did we get here? What are the factors that have made this now to this point just about a half year stalemate?
Well, there are a lot of things to consider when it comes to that. People point to a growing polarization in the legislature. We're looking at legislative districts that are increasingly, people will say like they're redistricted to high heaven. These are districts that are drawn to be safe for Republicans and Democrats. The latest round of redistricting was certainly done to, you know, help Republicans keep their majority, but also help Democrats who had to sign off on that plan kind of hold steady. And when you've got a district that's contorted to keep people who are, you know, the elected incumbents party, that rewards people who grow increasingly extreme. It rewards people who are thinking about not a general election challenger, but a primary opponent, a primary election challenger who, if you're a Republican, would challenge you to the right and make you move right in your positions. That trend we've seen nationally, we see it in Pennsylvania, and it makes compromise really unattractive politically. A compromise vote on the transportation funding package of a couple years ago was kind of a liability for certainly Republican legislators who voted for what effectively was an increase in the gas tax. You know, that was considered to be a major compromise. It had support on both sides of the aisle. It had support from a broad range of interest groups, and yet it was still seen as a very politically touchy thing. So we're looking at a similar situation now. In addition, one of the reasons that you'll see people point to for the length of this budget impasse, and we're 2 days away from hitting the modern day record of budget impasses. There was another one that ended on December 23rd in 2003 under former Governor Ed Rundell. One of the reasons that this has gone on so long is because you don't have the same public outcry about the length of this standoff. And that is because of a 2009 court decision in particular that said state employees have to get paid if they're called into work during a budget impasse. So you don't have people, you know, setting up impromptu soup kitchens on the Capitol steps. You don't have rallies. You don't have the Capitol hallways thronged with, mobbed with protesters, with protesting state employees who haven't received their checks. Earlier this year, I talked to a woman who, back in the 90s, she lived out in western Pennsylvania. Her husband was a state auditor. He hadn't been paid in 2 months, and so she drove the 4 hours to the Capitol with her three young kids and sat outside the governor's residence in Harrisburg for a week or so to get answers. She knocked on the doors of all these legislators to say, you know, when are you going to do your job and pay my husband, essentially? That kind of thing doesn't happen anymore. So that entire pressure point was removed, and so the next people to take up the mantle of pressuring the legislature about doing their jobs, we've seen it be the human services nonprofits organizations, the counties, the school systems, the school districts that are saying, look, you're making us lay people off. You're making us curb services. You're making us borrow billions of dollars collectively to try to make this work.
Well, and that maybe that's the next thing. What do you think? If the schools don't reopen in January, would that maybe be the thing that, I mean, as long as the teachers aren't at work and educators are kind of stuck because the school doors aren't open, does that propel them to Harrisburg to then knock on a few doors?
I mean, any number of things could propel these different factions to Harrisburg to try harder to work out a deal. I certainly am no longer predicting what's going to, you know, propel people to meet in the middle anymore because we've had so many stops and starts. But look, you know, the largest school district in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, has said that come the end of January, they're going to have to close their doors if the state budget impasse doesn't end. That is a huge black eye. And a huge problem for all those kids and teachers. I mean, so I think it would be really astounding if the legislature and the governor did not do something before late January. But smaller school districts are saying that they might have to close before late January. It's hard to know. Like I said, it's hard to know what can help or push these different factions in the Capitol to compromise.
Right. School districts in this area are looking at the possibility of just not reopening after the holidays, and that might start some sort of snowball effect. In the meantime, so, Mary, you're saying, and you would know better than I, that this would be unexplored territory if a budget impasse were to go into a next calendar year.
Well, unexplored in that I don't think we've seen that in what we think of as kind of the modern era of budget impasses. I can't remember the decades, but there has been a year-long budget impasse before in Pennsylvania history, but it was decades ago. And it's always hard to know if those past budget impasse records, if that meant that the entire state budget was held up or if it meant that just it was held up partially. Right now, we're in a full, budget year standoff, but in past years, there have been stopgaps, or the budget has been vetoed only in part.
Well, it's certainly not, whatever it ends up being, it's not something that's desirable to the citizens of Pennsylvania, and I would imagine not to the legislative leaders or the governor certainly as well. So hopefully there'll be a Christmas miracle. If not, I imagine we'll still be talking about this on into the new year. Mary, thank you so much for being with us. Mary Wilson, our Capitol correspondent, joining us on the phone from Harrisburg. And I know you'll be watching developments as they happen.
That's right. Thanks for having me, Paul.
You bet. Coming up, we'll look at the reasons for the closure of the Shenango Coke plant. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.